took a bath. I thought it was Saturday.
That's something new for us.
It was Saturday, yeah.
They have showers now.
They do? Here, you want the mic? I'm Bill Smith. I'm an alcoholic. I am sober through the grace of God. I always say that because if you look up the word grace, it means a free gift, which means I didn't have to do anything to earn it. Because if I had, you'd have a different speaker. And I always say through the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, so some people would have stuck their hand out and loved me when I was unlovable, you know. And I don't have a clue what I'm going to talk about. I didn't sleep good, didn't meditate good, I did work out good. I worked out good. I do a lot of physical exercise. I'm also diabetic. I never take this for granted. This is the only time I feel inadequate when I'm on the podium. And I was talking to a friend of mine from Oregon. He was telling me that you ought to thank God for the gift that you've been given, that you've been able to do that for all these years. And I do thank him until I get into an airport and I'm going through all that crap and then I'm not quite as grateful as I should be. And I went out 7 weekends in a row, caught home on Monday night late, and was back on the plane on Thursday, and then you looked at me and says, you know, you're absolute nuts. You've lost it. And I went and told my sponsor, I said, listen, I'm just getting too old to go out every weekend and everything. He said, Billy, just tell him no. Go out like once in a while. And the reason I'm telling this story, the guy here is involved in this story, and I've got some really good friends here I haven't seen in a long time, and I've made friends around the country that I would not have, lifelong friends, if I hadn't have been asked to do this. And I wouldn't take nothing for those friendships because I came in your party of one. And so I sat down with my sponsor, and I told him, we talked it over, and he said, go out like once a month and everything. But he says, you're going to have friends call and just always say yes. And I said, okay. And what I do is I do it sneaky. You know, they said, well, you come? And I said, well, I don't like traveling, but here's my number. And, you know, I got very ungrateful, so they don't call. So, you know, I go, you know. And so I sat down with my sponsor, and we talked all this stuff. And I go home, and I push my answering machine, and here's a message. We're starting a new annual dinner at a golf tournament. And Harold called me, Harold Fox, and he called me and says, "Golf." And my sponsor, he's not a golfer, he's a golfing nut. And he says that you're allowed to bring a guest and we have a golf tournament. So I call my sponsor and I said, listen, I got this call and I played it for him and I said, here. And I told him no. He said, you call him up and tell him you coming and you bringing me. You know. And so I did. And I hadn't told Harold no anyway. I just told my sponsor I had, you know. And so we went down, and that was, I think it was last November, if I'm not correct. And I'm sober a little over 30 years, and I did another fourth and fifth step. That's the third complete fourth and fifth I did. And he had a good time. I thought they should have been more, you know, they should have let him win the golf tournament, but they didn't. That's just my opinion. You know, I thought... And we had a great time, and I've had 2 sponsors. I've had Roger for almost 3 years, and I had Ted for 27. And my first sponsor got married. He's an old, old man, married a young, young, young girl. And he moved to Mexico most of the time. And God's in his grace, just all of a sudden this guy, Roger, started showing up on Skid Row all the time, and that's where I hang out. And I go to the homeless vet center, and there's Roger, and I go over to the Samaritan house, and there was Roger, and went to the detox center, and there was Roger, and I needed a sponsor. So if you're new here, I'm sober 30 years, I need a sponsor more today than when I came in. Absolutely. It makes a difference. I need somebody to know exactly what kind of person Billy Smith is. Huh? I'm not going to give a long drunk a lot because I don't feel like it, so I don't know what that means. But, you know, I hear, and I got to just... I said a thing back in Erie, Pennsylvania years ago that I wish I could get all them tapes and burn because I heard somebody else say it and I thought it sounded good, but it had nothing to do with my life. Nothing, because I'm not like that. And I don't think we all are exactly like. We're certainly not all raised alike. I was raised in a dream house, for Christ's sake. I never seen my mother and father take a drink. I never seen them smoke a cigarette. I never heard my mother say the S word. Much less these other words. I never heard cuss words. I never heard the N word in my house. I was raised in the deep south. I got all that crap on the street. I never learned that. I was raised right. My mother said I got 3 sons and him. you know, and you know, I was raised right and just turned left. You know what I mean? You know, I'm the only kid they ever got out of jail, and they got me out a lot. And, you know, I remember during my drinking career, my brothers used to come and get me, and they come and got me one time. And I don't tell that story no more because I had the wrong city. But I did go to jail, but it was in another city. And I was that drunk, I didn't even have the city right, you know. So Patty Ochoa is one of my favorite people, and she said if she'd known the pastor was going to be that important, she would have paid more attention. And, you know, and I'm the same way. And I'm a blackout drinker, and I didn't know that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a true story. I'm sitting down at the Lana Club, and they're all telling these stories, and they said, well, I bet you, the way you drink, I know you blacked out. I said, I never blacked out in my life, you dummies. You know, and you know how we are, sitting around talking. They're sitting around talking and telling these stories. So I started telling about one time I got drunk in St. Petersburg, Florida, on Haines Road. I woke up in, that was on Friday. I woke up in Dunedin, Florida on Sunday. I come outside the motel. There was blood in the motel. This day, I don't know whose that was. It wasn't mine. And there was no car. And I found my car Wednesday on Madeira Beach. And the guy says, that's a blackout. I said, no, I just don't remember. He said, Billy, that's a blackout. I said, oh, shoot, I had them all the time. My whole life is like a blackout. I said, oh. I said, only alcoholics have that, you know. And I love what Dick said. I just, you know, I mean, Bob, I just had a couple of drinks when I was young. I went to a bootlegger's house one time, and he had a daughter, and she had what I wanted, and I was willing to go to any lengths to get it except talk to her. You know what I mean? And you don't get too far when you don't talk. And I had a glass of that white whiskey, and whatever was in there was pretty good because it wasn't long. She was in that little old Plymouth of mine, and so whatever was in there was a good thing. And I didn't go back the next day looking for that stuff again. That didn't happen. But what alcohol did for me was it just let me come out and play. You know, I knew I was loved. I never was abused. I don't know anything about none of that stuff. And the truth of it is, I'm the kind of guy that Silk Road talks about. I joined the Navy to see the world and became a drunk. And that's my story. I was arrested a lot in the Navy. You can do a lot of things in the Navy. You can't miss the boat. I was in Japan, and I went to one of them houses where they got the two things I loved. And I had too much of both, I guess. And when I got up, the boat was gone. I went in with little white stripes. I was going to make a career out of the Navy because I figured guys like me would have a lot of trouble on the outside because what I do is I pick up one drink, and all bets are off. I'm drunk. I'm what the book talks about. I'm always insanely drunk. I'm not the, I heard a guy say, well, I didn't get drunk every time I drank. I can count on one hand the times I didn't get drunk on every time I pick up a drink. When I pick up a drink, I don't know what your drink of choice is, but mine's more, you know. And I didn't know that was part of alcoholism. I didn't have a clue. I don't get into all this stuff, how we feel and all that stuff. I can't stand the way I drink. You know, and I break out in places like the Funny Farm in Phoenix, and I live in Las Vegas, you know, but I wound up there one day, you know, and so I just joined the Navy and see the world, and I went in with little white stripes. I was a radio operator. My daughter has a picture. I made a Seaman of the Month for the Navy, and it was 2 or 3 months later, I was busted and took all my stripes. And that's you know what I mean? I just flourish and then fall, And the last time I went for the old man, he said, what are you going to do? And I said, 16 more days. That's when the day ship got back to the Long Beach. And when I got back to Long Beach, the day I got out of the Navy, I got locked up with the Long Beach police. And I thought we should celebrate getting out. And I remember calling my dad, saying, I'm telling him I'm coming home to Florida. They lived in St. Petersburg. But when you muster out, if any of you guys was in service, you know, they give you a lot of money. And I was at sea a lot, so I had quite a bit of money on the books. And so I started to St. Petersburg, Florida from Long Beach, California. And 56 days later, I showed up. That's a long drive, especially when you go through Chester, Illinois. I don't know why I was up there, but... Seemed like a good time. I went into a bar and I met her, you know, and fell in love for a week. You know what I mean? And it was good. And if I remember correctly, that car is still sitting somewhere in Illinois. I'm not sure where it's at, you know, and I didn't go look for it. And I just called my dad, and I do what drunks do. I drank till the money ran out, and I called my father and said, if you'll send me a bus ticket, I'll come home. And I remember I got a job at General Electric. I went over, and they didn't have any positions. And they said, the only thing we got is a janitor. I said, I'll take it. They said, well, you're a little overqualified for that. I said, I don't care. If that's what you got open, I'll take it. And in less than a year, I was in a lab making things for missiles, and I just flourished, just took right off. And if you miss 5 days, they fire you. I missed 28. They wouldn't fire me, so I just quit. And went to work on a fishing boat, and I thought I'd found heaven. It was all drunks, and they fired me. And, went to work for a roofing company, worked a half a day. My father went and got that check. I wouldn't even go back. They all went to lunch, and we ordered a couple of pitcher beers. And after we had three or four pitchers, they all wanted to go back to work, and then I just didn't feel like it. They said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to get me another pitcher of beer. Do what you want to. I don't like roofing that much anyway, you know. And so I get drunk. I don't know about you. And to make it really simple for you, I just went home. I finally got burnt out in Florida. I had a piece of paper. If you're caught driving in the state of Florida, you automatically start pulling time. Don't even have to go to court. I just start pulling jail. And I got pulled over. And they give me one more break. And I went home and told my mother, I said, I'm going to Las Vegas. I had a friend of mine that kept saying, why don't you go to Las Vegas? They got 24-hour bars and a lot of showgirls. I thought, boy, that ain't a bad combination there. And I went home and told that little gray-haired mom of mine, third-grade education, I said, I'm going to Las Vegas. And she said, Billy, we're going to help you pack. And she looked at me and said, we don't know what to do for you. I remember my dad looking me in the eye one time and telling me, when you do this thing that you do, and nobody hears from you for 2 or 3 weeks, just pick up the phone, say, hi, Mom, I'm okay, and hang up. Call collect. Just call her, let her know. She worries, she don't know if you're dead or alive. And I always promise my father, Dad, I promise you I'll do it. I can stand before this podium and tell you I never picked up the phone once and called my mom. Because once I take a drink, my mom, my dad, you, nobody's important. And I'm not that kind of person. But I am when I drink. People used to tell Inga, why do you stay with him? She says, you don't understand. When he's not drinking, he's the most generous, nicest human being you ever met. Let him drink for 3 hours, and he's an absolute monster. And that's exactly what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about. You know, I hear people say they can't stand it. You know, I never really felt that bad. I always felt like I was coming from behind the eight ball, and I still do. I'm sober 30 years. I still feel inadequate. I see these other people, and I hear them. My life ain't like that. My life is a mess right now. I just come down here. My daughter's working day labor. She's 37 years old, been drinking and drugging. Now she's smoking crack in her mother's house. I'm trying to get her mother kicked out. She don't even get a Christmas card from me. It'd be nice if I had four kids. I don't. I have one. I heard Mary Reagan say years ago, she said he lived in AA with a heavy heart. And I thought, what the heck is she talking about? Debbie was about 7. Well, I know what it's about. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I wouldn't wish it on Saddam Hussein. I wouldn't wish it on Hitler. Nobody deserves that, to watch your kid destroy themselves. Nobody. And so, but I go back, and my sponsor says, I can help your kids. I just couldn't help mine. I said, dang, that don't sound like fair, you know. And life isn't fair. Donna says something from San Diego that I love. That every now and then in AA, and I heard Tina last night, I just loved her. Because my life, I got a brother that's got leukemia, and my ex-wife, who I still take care of, her brother's got less than 90 days to live. And my life is just, you know, I like to change a lot of things. But life is like that. And my job is to hold my head up and put one foot in the front of and keep with that newcomer and keep going down detox and keep doing this. But I didn't know like that. And I just come out to Las Vegas, and I wound up living on the streets. I hated people that wouldn't put their cigarettes out because my shoes didn't have soles on them. And I couldn't look you in the eye, and I was talking about it. It says coming back and coming in A and getting your opinion back. I was just so devastated. You know, I just felt like I'd run the race of life and lost. you know, and I wound up meeting this cocktail waitress, and she was from Germany. She had two or three things I really liked. She also had a car and an apartment. Whew, I was moving up. And her name was Inga, and I fell in love with her after I met her. I got drunk and got married. You can do that in Vegas. And for the first time in my life, I was between 28 and 30. I don't know for sure. My life don't, the numbers don't make sense, so I don't tell nobody no more. That's the first time in my life I ever tried to quit drinking and straighten my life out, and I thought I could do it. I knew when it come time to step up to the plate, I could do it. I am always like that. And when I stepped up the plate, I struck out. I meant to, you know, and when she married me, she knew how I drank, so she brought whiskey home, thought that would keep me at home. And I get half drunk, and I all of a sudden, I get gasoline in my shoes, and I'm gone, you know, and I was married just a very short period of time, just 2 or 3 months, and God in his grace, I got drunk and won a whole bunch of money in the 60s. I won like almost $20,000, and some people in the business like Billy Smith, and they took all the money off of me. And they gave me a little bit and said, this is enough to finish that drunk you're on. And they didn't give me a receipt. And when you sober up, come back, we'll give you the money back. And so you don't need a wife and you got all that money. If you broke, you need one, but not with all that money. So I went back to get my stuff. I was going to leave. And God in his grace, I come home and she was really sick. And I'm talking about really sick. And I had to bathe her and take care of her. And I didn't drink for 4 or 5 days. And I took care of this pretty gal. And I married an absolute angel. And I fell in love with her after I married her. And I said, this is not going to work the way we're going. This is not. And she said, well, if you keep drinking like that, it's not. And I went out and got drunk again. I went on another one. And I agreed to go to a hospital and dry out. And I did. I went down to California. Went down to Samson Clinic in Santa Barbara. The Sahara Hotel sent me down there. And I'm really good at what I do. They used to send people from the schools out, from the crap schools, to watch me deal craps. And I have no education. But if you break 100 guys in, you'll get guys with good heads. Good hands, they don't have the head, or you get guys that's smart and don't have the hands, and I had both. I didn't go to school, but I'm really good at math. I can take figures in my head and just run them right out, and my hands were just like, I don't know what it was. It just, God gave me a gift, and so we agreed to, and so we went to Florida, and I didn't drink. I went to the hospital, and I remember the guy sitting on the side of my bed telling me, and I don't know how old I was. I might have been 30, and he said, if you drink anymore, you're going to die, and I'm thinking, God. I said, you know, what's going on? He says, your liver and everything is quitting on you. Every organ in your body is shutting down. Your liver is shot. You're all done. If you drink, you're going to die. And I tell everybody that he didn't mention Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't even know if that's true or not. But I do know he said, don't drink. So I am being the good guy I am. I don't know how many days I was in the hospital, so I ain't going to tell you. When I finally got back to Las Vegas, I went up and told Inga, I said, if you take a drink, I'm leaving. You know, and she said, what's that all about? So I told her. I said, they said, if I drink anymore, I'm going to die. And I said, let's go to Vegas. And she said, what are we going to go? I said, let's go to Florida and see my family. And how are we going to go down there? I said, well, I got some money. Well, how much money you got? I said, a lot. Well, who's got it? I said, Pitsy, Manahan. So I said, come on. And they had $14,000 for me. So we bought a little home, and we went to Florida. My dad was in the car business, so he got me a car. And I didn't drink for 6 or 7 years. I'm not a mixer anyway. I've always been irritable, restless, and discontent. I come out of the chute a little wired, and I still am. You know, I'm still not wrapped really, really good. On a good day, I look pretty good. But there is days I'm not like a lot of these guys. I hear from the podium, everything's together. I am not together. You know, but I have learned how to stay with you close enough that I kept that drink pushed out far enough that I haven't picked it up. Have I thought about drinking? Absolutely. I've had the obsession to come back so strong, I just beg God. I don't ask him. I begged him this morning. My sponsor said, you don't ask God to keep you sober, you beg him. So I do. I say, please. And I asked him this morning, please don't let me drink that crap, you know. And so I came out of that hospital and I need to tell you about the morning I took the drink. I'm sober anywhere. Some people say six, some say eight, so I say seven. I'm not sure. But I got a little truck and a boat. I'm a redneck type guy. If it runs, I shoot at it. So if you're an animal activist, I'm not your guy. You can cut this part out of the tape. If it runs, I shoot at it, and I got it hanging all over the house. I can shoot and fish. I just bribed them people up in Oregon. I just got back from whitewater rafting. They want me to come up and speak, and I know there's some rivers up there. And I said, okay, I'll be glad to, but you got to take me fishing. If you don't want to take me fishing, I ain't speaking. So they said, took me on a whitewater rafting trip for the second time. We caught almost 400 smallmouth bass, so it was a good, and it said one of the best pictures I ever heard. I said, that's because we caught so many fish. I was in a good mood. You know. I don't wait to turn you on, but that turns me on. But, you know, but the morning that I took that drink, when I'm playing in a golf tournament, I'm playing with the two Mantle boys, Ray and Roy, Mickey's two brothers, and it's 4,000 first place, and I'm in third place, and I'm no longer going to win the tournament. And thank God they wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a truck and a boat, fishing poles. I got a good-looking cocktail waitress at home. I have a 6-year-old daughter. My life couldn't have been better. Inga had me dressed like Bozo the Clown. I was pink, blue, and yellow and everything. You could see me 4 miles before you look. And I'm just crushing that golf ball. And I got two pockets full of money. And Ray or Rory, one of them offered me a drink. And I drank it like it was a glass of ginger ale. If you read about Jim, and that's the reason I'm glad they got the stories in there. If you read about Jim, they got the three stories. Jim had he was irritable. He was pissed because he's working for a company he used to own. Now, that would sort of get my goat. But he says there's a line in there that I love. He had no thought of drinking. None. If you think you're going to get a warning from this stuff, listen to Billy Smith. It won't happen if you're an alcoholic. It won't. Read about Bill. Bill sits slamming on the bar. I've had a drink. I might as well get drunk. Not knowing that he doesn't have a chance anymore because he's had a drink. He must get drunk. See, I don't have to drink today, but if I take a drink, I will have to drink today and I will have to drink tomorrow. I will no longer have a choice. It's not if I drink again. It's just when. Because I'm an alcoholic. And that morning I took a drink and I had a couple, three beers at the golf course. I didn't go get another girl. I didn't go to jail. Nothing happened. And I went home and told Inga, I said, look, I had a couple of beers at the golf course and nothing happened. And she started screaming, oh, my God, what are you nuts? And just going berserk like I just robbed the bank or something. I said, Inga, chill out. I don't even want another. And she said, Billy, my God. You have no clue how you used to be, honey. Oh, my God, please don't start drinking again. I said, Inga, I have no intentions of doing that. My God, I just had a couple of beers at the golf course. God, put a lid on it, you know. My neighbor said, I hear you had a beer at the golf course. Won't you come over? I said, hell, I'll be right over. You know. 2 weeks later, because I'm alcoholic, I'm falling down drunk. 14 months later, I'm standing in my front yard trying to take my own life, trying to commit suicide. And I'm not that type. I'll shoot you. But I just couldn't do it no longer. And for the first time in my life, I knew whatever it took to be a good human being. I didn't have it. I didn't think nothing about alcoholism. I just knew whatever it took to be a halfway decent human being. I knew I was a bad father, bad brother, bad son. I was not allowed on my brother's property. Not long along had contact with my family. My neighbors, when I'd come out, they would go in their house. So I no longer had contact. I'd just become a monster. And I just couldn't do it no more. And Don Pitts, he's no longer with us. And he said something, and I only use stuff that applies to my life. And what he said was, he was standing in his front yard trying to take his own life. And he said, he had a mind that wouldn't work and a body that wouldn't die. And if you're ever there, if you know what I'm talking about, if you've never thought of that, if you've never really been with a suicidal, you have no clue what it's like. I'm no longer mad or nothing. I'm just tired. I'm not even anything. I'm just tired. I'm tired of Debbie. I'm tired of the job. I'm just tired. I don't want to wake up and feel like this every morning. I just can't do it no more. I'm not even mad at nobody no more. For a guy that's always been so angry, I'm just tired. I'm just done. And God says, I think he's ready. And this pretty lady that I was married to did a stupid thing. She went and joined Alcoholics Anonymous. she's not a bit more alcoholic than I'm an astronaut. And I asked her later on, I said, why did you do that? She said, well, I knew you loved me. And I thought, sure, you'd follow me. I said, I loved you a lot, but not that much. You know what I mean? That's A&A. You can't drink there. So I went to an Al-Anon meeting. She talked me into going. What she told me, she said, go to an Al-Anon meeting and learn how to live with me, because we ain't getting along, and I'm not getting into the bedroom. You know what I mean? And I love the bedroom, and I'm not getting in there, and they're starting to really get to me, and you know. And so I went to an Al-Anon meeting, and M.O. Bittis, especially my sponsor's wife, all for 1 hour talked about my drinking. An Al-Anon meeting. And one dumb lady says, just how important is drinking to you? I thought, none of your darn business. What the heck is this? And I never went to another Al-Anon meeting for a long time. I thought, boy, I ain't going there no more. You know, they are vicious, you know. And everybody knew I was a drunk but me. Isn't that weird? The alcoholic kids can't see the picture. The mind will just not let it see what comes on. Even when I was living on the streets, everything owned in a carnation box. And she took me to that dance, and it was a dance, and it was the next night. There was no dance that night. It was an AA meeting, and the speaker was Nancy Stewart, and her and I are still really good friends, and I knew I had nothing in common with her. She was a girl that liked girls, so I got nothing in common with her. And then she talked about how she drank, how she started drinking, and she couldn't control it, and when she wanted to quit, she couldn't quit, and I thought, oh, my God. Larry's sponsor was there, Johnny Harris. And Father Hillary talked about the mule in a ditch. And I thought, well, I touched this guy, what the heck does that mean? They said, we don't care why you're an alcoholic. Let's just do something about it. Now, all I'm trying to do, and AA was good, because I went all weekend to that roundup, and I got back into the bedroom. So I loved AA. Worked for me. You know, I don't know why you come here. I hear a guy said, if you don't come here for yourself, you can't stay here. Well, I'm living proof that that's not true. I don't care how God gets you here. If he drops you through the roof, if the judge orders you, if your wife sends you, if your brother sends you, or even if your son or your daughter sends you, I don't care how you got here. If you're lucky enough and you're an alcoholic to be sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're the luckiest human being that ever lived on the face of the earth. Because the book says, find a spiritual way of life or go on to the bitter end, right? Be nice if it was a door three. Find her. Get him. Get a better job. There's no door. Find a spiritual way of life or go on to the bitter end. Top of page 44 is really simple. If you start to drink and you can't control it, or if you've ever tried to quit and you can't, then it says you're dealing with a disease and it just give it to you that only a spiritual experience can conquer. Wow, not too good for a guy like me. I know there's a God, but I know he don't like cats like me. I went that weekend, I didn't go to a meeting, and then I come home one night, and I didn't know you guys had turned my light on, and I come home, and I walked in the house, and I told Inga, I said, as soon as you fix supper, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. God, I never seen her fix supper that fast in my life. Here, eat. And I just started showing up. And it's important I tell you this, and it's important that you guys didn't come up and tell me to leave. I raised my hand and said, my name is Bill. And that's probably the first time in my life I was honest. I didn't know what I was. And I'm going to two or three meetings a day. I'm not drinking. I'm went from suicide to homicide in about a week. I no longer wanted to hurt me. I wanted to kill everybody I seen. I sat in the back of the room. I didn't feel like I was welcome. I didn't feel anything. I was locked in the pissed off position. And no key. Why don't you work the steps? I said, come on outside and I'll knock you off of these. You know. Why don't you get a sponsor? I said, won't you mind your own business? And so I don't hurt you. And I just went and just angry. And right before my 30 days was up, I raised my hand and says I was an alcoholic because I'm a street kid. If that's what you want to hear, that's fine by me. It had nothing to do with me. It's all head talk. It has nothing to do with anything else. But I did the most important thing there was. I showed up. And people started coming up to me and said, we're really glad you're here. Tommy Muldoon, I hated Tommy. And he's got a year and a half more than I do. And Tommy was the kind of guy, and maybe some of you guys hung out with guys that caused trouble. Tommy was the kind of guy that always caused trouble. His fight record was 0-93. He started the trouble and then backed off, and everybody else got the crap kicked out of him. You know what I mean? And we never found Tommy. You know, he brought it back up later, you know. And I walked in there, I couldn't get rid of Tommy. Every time I turn around, there he is from coffee. You need to be here. You need to be here. You know what I mean? I said, Tommy, listen, leave me alone. And I couldn't get rid of him. And Catfish John was, he just passed away last year. And he was one of my favorites. And all them guys talking about can't stand the way they feel and all that. And he said, the exact natures of my wrong. And I'm waiting for him to say, I'm self-centered, I'm this. And I said, what is it, John? He says, I continue to drink while drunk. I said, oh, hell, that's what's wrong with me. I get drunk, and they go home, and I continue to drink. He said, yeah, right, Billy, you're alcoholic. Once you start to drink, you can't control it. Then they go, it's not the caboose, it's the engine. I said, oh, what a great statement that is. Now what are we talking about? It's the first drink, not the last one, not the 15th one. I'm brand new. I'm digging a ditch. They're starting a triangle club, and I got the newcomer job, digging a ditch. The old timers underneath the umbrella drinking iced tea, making sure the ditch is straight. I look at Carl, and I said, Carl, listen to me. Let me ask you a question. He says, what is it? I said, tell me a cold beer wouldn't taste good right now. He said, Billy, I'd never tell you that. I said, see? He said, let me ask you a question. I said, okay, go ahead. I'm a smart dude, right? I'm a pit boss. He said, what does the 27th one taste like? I said, I'm not talking about 27 beers. I'm talking about one. He said, when did you ever have one beer? He said, what does the 16th one taste like, Billy? What does the 47th drink taste like, Billy? He said, they lose their taste after about 6 or 7 or 8. Now you're just drinking. I said, oh, yeah, that's right. Back to digging the ditch. Oh, shit. Dang, never thought of that, right? What does it taste like, the 47? What does it taste like the next day? It tastes good because I'm sick, you know. And, I didn't get a sponsor. I just showed up a lot. Doom. How you doing? Fine, not drinking. How you doing? Got a year in. Didn't tell nobody. Now I'm mad they don't give me a little cake or something with a candle. You know, they already know I've been here like 14 years, it feels like. I've been here a year. And come out of the Triangle Club one day, and I knew I was going to drink, and knew I wasn't going to get home. I was sober a little over a year. And I thought, this is it. I'm not doing what they're doing. I'm not getting what they did, and I've had all this fun I can take, and I'm out of here. And I turned around, and once again, this loving God in my life, there he stood, old Ted Davis. And I said, will you please be my sponsor? Before he could say anything, I said the most stupidest thing I've ever said in my life. I said, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. It's the wrong thing to tell Ted Davis, boy, I'll tell you. So he said, all right, be over at my house this afternoon at 1:30. I said, Ted, I didn't mean today. Jesus. He said, I said, okay, I'll be there, you know. And he said, I want you to go on the 12-step list. I said, Ted, listen to me. I haven't worked step zero. He said, Billy, I want you to just go help someone else. He said, as people come in AA, I've been watching you with low self-esteem. He said, you don't have any. And he said, you got to start doing esteem acts so you can get some kind of feeling inside. I went to a meeting and some dummy said, we're not sick people. We're not bad people trying to get good. We're sick people trying to get well. Well, I just love that. And I ran to Ted. I'm not a bad person trying to get good. I'm just a sick person trying to get well. And he said, that's true, but if you don't get gooder, you ain't going to stay here. So you got to get gooder, you know. He says, you're a snake, so let's straighten it out. He said, what I want you to do is put your shopping cart back. I said, what in the world has that got to do with AA? He says, a big sign said, put cart here. Did you know they actually got a sign that says, and it even says, please. Please, will you put your cart back? I didn't know that. I thought it said, see how far you can push it. You know? So I just put it back. We were up in Oregon, and I've been doing it for 30 years. And we were up in Oregon, and we're coming out of conference, and I just got done speaking. And Joe and I, as I walked by this lady says, and I'm sure she said it so I could hear it. I got to do a lot more than put my shopping cart back. And Josino looked at me and says, you know something? She's never put hers back. I said, that's right. Has nothing to do with the cart. It's doing the next right thing. I don't stop up by my truck. I stop and help somebody. I try to help one of God's kids every day. I ask God this morning, please put somebody in my life that I can be of service. Let me help one person in this room today. That's all I asked him. I didn't say, let me go down and bless the whole room. Maybe somebody in here needs to hear what I got to say, because there was people showed up the weekend I was there, Johnny. Now, I don't know who said the magic words, but somebody turned my light on, and it hasn't gone out. It's dimmed a lot since I've been in AA, but every now and then it blossoms back up, and I've had some dark days in AA. And I heard a guy from North Carolina say, sometime you just have to stand in the hall, and there's no doors and there's no windows, and you just have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, and sooner or later all the windows are open, the doors are open, then you keep going to Ryan, and Tina talked about it last night, and every now and then it just couldn't. Right now, there's no lights in my hall. It's all dark and everything, and I will continue to do all the things that I do. In fact, I will be doing more, you know. And I did a fourth step. I had a hard time doing a fourth and fifth step. I couldn't get the pencil on the paper, and I went to retreat and met Father. I met Father Don Lynch, and he turned my whole life around in 3 days. And he said, what if I told you God put you here to love you so you could love another human being? I come off that retreat and did a fourth and fifth, and did a fifth step with my sponsor, and about halfway through that thing, I looked at him and I said, I can't believe I'm sitting here telling you all this crap. And he said, Billy, don't you understand why? And I said, no, I don't, Ted. He said, Billy, you trust me. And I said, that's right, I do. There's stuff that he knows that my mother and father didn't know, it would only hurt them. But it's stuff that Ted needs to know, all my sexual things and all that. I'd like to tell you everything I woke up with was a woman, but it wasn't. I was a street kid, and I did whatever I do to survive. I'm not gay, but I just did whatever I had to do to survive. And it's just part of my story, and I'm not ashamed of nothing I did in the past. And it's important that I tell you that I'm not saying you're pure or nothing like that and everything. And I hear people say, if you have these kind of thoughts, I have all kinds of thoughts. I just don't act on them no more, you know. And so I was 6 and 7. When I got to 6 and 7, I found out a lot of things about me. I found out things that really bothered me. I found out that I was prejudiced and all kinds of things. And anything that stands between me and God's kids is a character defect. Anything. God's kids, no matter who they are. And I told God I didn't want to be like that no more. And I go down to this Skid Row detox, and I tell them guys before they leave there, when you leave, please call. If you call before you get out, you got a shot. If you hit the streets, nothing's going to happen. Give me a call. I got connections next door to Samaritan House. And if you're a guy, I can get you in there. If you're a lady, we can get you in the West to We Care. But we can do something if you call. If you don't call and hit the streets, you got no chance. My phone rang, and this guy on the other end says, you said, but call before you leave, and so I'm calling. And I said, what's your name? He said, Jerome Jackson. I said, Jerome, what do you look like? He said, well, I'm black. I said, Jerome, I can tell that on the phone, for Christ's sake. I said, I got a better idea. Why don't you just come stand out front of DSOC Center, and I'll be right down. I said, I got a big white truck and a yellow dog, and I'll be down and pick you up. And I picked up, and there he stood with a little pencil mustache, and he got in my truck. And I said, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm out of the hood. I said, listen to me real close. I'm a redneck. The only hood I know anything about is the one on my truck. I don't know about no hood. I said, what do you mean? I said, what do you do for a living? He says, you had to work at McDonald's or something. He said, Billy, I've never had a W-2 form in my life. I said, oh, my God, how old are you? He said, 44 years old. I said, Jesus Christ, how many times have you been in prison? He said, 3. I said, oh, it's adding up. I said, okay. I said, all right, this is what we'll do. We'll start out with day labor. He said, I don't do day labor. I said, then get out of the truck, because this is not negotiable, and my time is important. So again, he said, okay. I said, Jerome, when's the last time you listened to shit kicking music? He says, I never have. I said, today's your first day. Nine years later, he tells everybody I'm a rapping redneck. That ain't true, you know. He started out day labor, got a job at a hospital cleaning the pans. Let me tell you what he does today. And for 4 years, he'd make 12-step calls on the cat bus because he couldn't get his driver's license back. I told him, I said, don't worry about it. I know some lawyers. We'll get that taken care of. I took all that stuff to the lawyers, and they said, he won't be driving for a while. I said, buddy, I tried. He said, I appreciate it. He now has a driver's license and everything. And let me tell you what he does today. He's a shift boss. We got his record sealed. He's a shift boss in charge of all the slots and everything in a hotel in Las Vegas. He still goes back to West Cary every week. He's never got where he come from. He still goes to the homeless vet center. They go down, and him and Thomas and them guys rode that truck up of Thomas's, and they rode that, go down and feed them homeless every Sunday at 4 p.m. They never forgot where they come from. My good friend Stanley that Larry knows was on Social Security. They talked him in. We talked him into, he went to, got a job at Circle K, making less money than he was on Social Security. Last year he made a big six figures. Big six figures, sent out 4,000 to charities in 1 month. Never forgot where they come from. Never forgot to give back. Never forgot to things, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous doing. And by doing it in 6 and 7, going to 8 and 9, my brothers would not allow me on their property. And my brother was at my 30th birthday by mistake. They've never been to an AA meeting, and I don't do a big celebration on my birthday for my 30th. I just take a cake at my home group, and my sponsor has a meeting called the High and Dry Group, and it's a speaker meeting. He says, I want you to speak for your 30th birthday. And I said, I just spoke there 3 or 4 months ago. Get somebody else. He says, I'm your sponsor. Not only are you speaking, be there 30 minutes early. I said, okay. My brother has leukemia, and he has such a bad heart. His heart stopped about 3 weeks ago, and it stopped right in front of a hospital, and they got him in, and they changed everything. He was in the hospital for 3 days. They changed everything on him, and he got it slowed way down. He's coming back out to Vegas in December. Him and all my family is. All my brothers and their families are all coming out in December to stay with me. And he went to the doctor, and the doctor says, if you get any better, I think I might let you go to Vegas. And my brother says, is that a yes or no? Can I go or can't? And he said, what do you mean? He said, well, if I can go, I'm leaving now. We're leaving for Vegas. And the doctor says, I'm going to let you go. I know God didn't have anything to do with it, but I just thanked him anyway. He showed up on Saturday. My birthday was on Tuesday. And so I told him, I said, listen, I don't know what's going on. Everybody in Vegas, and Angie Deal and all them came up from California, and I don't have a clue what's going on. And I told my brother, I said, what are you going to do? I said, Wednesday, listen, I got to do a thing Wednesday because my sponsor asked me to do something. And I got to go do this thing, and I'll be gone for an hour. I said, what are you guys going to do? They said, we're going to Gillies, the lion dance. I said, okay, listen, this meeting's from 7 to 8. I'll be at Gillies at 8:15, and we'll lion dance. And he says, okay, we'll see you there, you know. And so I go down to this High and Dry group. It's at the Homeless Vet Center. It's in the cafeteria, and I pull up to the Homeless Vet Center. And there's usually about, for that meeting, there's usually like 40, 50 people at that speaker's meeting. Maybe if Bob Darrell, myself, or somebody shows up, it might be 60 or 70. And when I pull in, you can't get a parking place. I said, oh, my God, what's going on here? Something ain't right. And I knew it. And so I go open the door, and they got all these signs around this huge thing, a perfect 30. A guy that I helped get sober called Roberta. He's an artist. And they got a huge picture of this yellow lab that I got. And it's my buddy. And it's a picture in a picture in a picture in a picture. My God, what it took to draw that. And I wouldn't take $1 million cash for it. And he just grabbed me and hugged me. And I got a huge blanket there with 3 labs on it. And there stood my brother and his wife at this meeting. And I told Roger, I said, I can't do this. He said, just do the best you can. So I spoke about 35 minutes. And my brother said, of all the things, he said, we knew you was loved, but we had no idea that you was loved like that. Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I'm a kid with a 9th grade education that nobody would even open their door for me. And here you put my family back together. And Bobby called Sam and told Sam and her niece and told the nieces. And all my nieces are lawyers. And mine lives on the streets, and just smoking crack and over there. You know, and one time, and God has a sense of humor, you know. And one time I had to go to San Diego to speak, and I'm getting ahead of myself. In October, I used to wouldn't take a commitment in October because I hunt, and I get tags. So hunting or speaking, I hunt, you know. And I got all these tags, and I can't wait to go, and lady comes up to me and said, don't forget now, on October the 1st, you got this workshop on sponsorship. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I don't do October the 1st. October the 1st, the truck's heading north. And she said, that's okay, we'll get somebody else. I said, no, no. If I made that commitment, I'm keeping it. I said, okay, load the truck up. As soon as the thing's over, you're out of here. So I went and did the workshop, and it turned out really good. I was really feel good about it. And I was just getting ready to leave, and Bowery come up and says, don't forget, tomorrow's Dick Toussaint's 35th birthday, and they want you to chair the meeting. I said, why can't he have his birthday some other time? So, Billy, that's when it is. I said, shit. I said, all right, I'll do it. I said, okay, I'll leave as soon as the meeting's over. So we went and did his 35th birthday, and I started, I did, and then I get ready to leave, and here come one of these dummies I sponsor. And he was in really bad shape. And he said the magic word, which was suicide. And I said, oh, my God. I said, okay, be over at my house in the morning, and we'll get this straightened out. I said, oh, gee. I got my truck loaded, and I said, God. So he come over. He was in a lot worse shape than I thought. And I spent almost day with this guy, and finally, he was laughing and everything, and I thought, yeah, cool. So I ran down to Nelson's Landing, shot a couple of birds, and come back and went to bed at 5:30 so I could get up really early and head north. And at 10 o'clock, my phone rang, and I picked it up, and it's my daughter. And she fell and crushed the side of her face and drunk. Now, if I'd have had my way, I would have been gone on Saturday. If I'd have had my way, I would have been gone on Sunday. And God says, listen, Billy, I got to hold you up, son, because something happened and you need to be here. Isn't it amazing that I just keep doing what you asked me to do and God can take care of me? Now, I know God didn't have anything to do with that, but I just thank him anyway. See, I know God doesn't have me come down here, but I'll thank him anyway. See, I always give God the credit. See, I'm going to tell this and I'm going to shut this thing down, but Alcoholics Anonymous, we were talking about this morning. My good buddy watches Steinfeld and all that. I watch the comedy. I watch the cartoon channel, The Roadrunner. I love The Roadrunner. I pull for that cat every day. You know what? I pull for that coyote. I hope that coyote eats that bird alive, but you don't. They made one cartoon where they called him, and at the end of it, I got him. Now what do I do with him? I said, eat him, you know. And I watch the Animal Channel. I watch the Animal Channel most often because I'm a dog lover right now. I was watching it one day, and I was watching The Predators. And I tied it into Alcoholics Anonymous. And people do this, but this is my thing. And so I'm going to do it right. If you watch the Animal Channel, and I love The Predators. I love the cheetahs and the wild dogs are my favorite. And you never see them run into the middle of a wildebeest herd or a thing herd and get something. They always pick the stuff out on the outside, right? The ones that's not going to meetings, you know what I mean? The ones that don't want a sponsor, you know what I mean? You never see them go inside the herd. If you watch the inside of the herd, they just bundle up, right? And they stay right together. And you can't get to them. They can't get to them because they're together. And they're always together. They stay right in there. Now, some of them straggle off and they get caught. And they get and then what happens is it's fatal. And I believe it's fatal here. You know, I go to detox on Friday. I go to the prisons second Friday. I go to West Care every Friday. I go down to the Samaritan House, and the guys just come into town. They know I do this, and I'm not making this up. I go to Samaritan House every Wednesday. I go to the jail every Wednesday afternoon to Mojave Jail. I go to the Samaritan House on Wednesday night, on Friday night. I'm involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I do a big book study on Sunday and one on Monday. And I'm watching this Animal Channel one day, and they got this elephant. And got this little elephant, and it's the darndest thing I've ever seen. Little elephant born, it couldn't walk, and it didn't do like the rest of us. And Tina talked about it last night, and right now I'm in that position. And the little elephant does what all the wild things do that can't keep up with the herd. Goes over and lays down to die. And the little elephant, but elephants are different. They're not like the rest of the animals. The mama went and got all of her sisters and said, we got a little guy over here in trouble. So they went to come over, and the elephant took the trunk and wrapped around that little thing, and they picked it right up, and the little elephant walked. He didn't walk like the rest of them, but he walked like a newcomer. You know what I mean? He just couldn't keep up and everything, and he couldn't do anything, couldn't go help nobody, nothing. But it was walking, and it was walking with the rest of the herd. And they put it down, and it would go lay down to die. And then one of the sisters would go over and wrap their trunk around it, right? And when my brother died, my sponsor said, "We hate to hear that, but come over and stay with us." And I went over and stayed with my sponsor for 3 days when my brother died. He died in a diabetic coma. And when I went through the first divorce, I moved in with Dick Patty. And they said, "We know you're okay, but just come and stay with us." And when I went through the second divorce, here you are again, right? Putting your arm around me, putting your trunk around me. And right now, with all this thing going on, my sponsor says you need to stay busy. And I got a lot of people calling me from around the country. They got your trunk around me. And every time this little elephant go lay down, right, the elephant come home and wrap his trunk around it, right, and pick it up. And at the end of the program, the newcomer is now no longer a newcomer. It's running wrong with the rest of the elephants. And that's the way Alcoholics Anonymous is. Alcoholics Anonymous, that's the reason it's so important. Larry talked about it last night, by having a home group and being involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard a guy in the room the other night, night before last, and he only went to 2 meetings a week. I don't know. I don't know how you can stay in the middle of the herd with 2 meetings a week. See, I'd rather do 15 meetings too many than one not enough. And I know it's not if I drink again, it's always just when. So I'm going to end this thing. I'm going to tell you about this yellow lab I got. I'm going to tell you about my God. My God watches over me all the time. And I know right now that he's going, everything's going to be okay. It probably might not be the way you want it, but I got my arm around you. And I know that. And I'm really in a pretty good spot. I really am. Could I like to change some things? Absolutely. That's not my job. My job is to hold my head up and tell you Alcoholics Anonymous works under all conditions. And I'm sure that I won't drink today because of people like you. I'm out in the desert. I take this old dog. He'll be 11, he'll be 12 next month. And we go out in the desert. We've been going there for years. He's field trained. If you hide from him, he'll just come back to you. He'll look for you. And I'm out there, and the wind's blowing one day, and he gets away from me. I just had him into the vet, and I found out he had a bad heart. And I'm going to take him out, and he chases these crap out there in that desert. And he was out there one day, and there was a little rabbit, and it was hurt. And he got right up on the rabbit. He got about 4 or 5 feet from it, and that rabbit was hurt. And this is a true story. He's never chased another rabbit since. He didn't bother it, and he hasn't chased them no more. He's just the most precious. And he's not a real lab. He was born without a tail. He's sort of an alcoholic lab. He's just... He really is. He's a weird-looking dude. He's not a full-grown. He only weighs 60 pounds. He's not big enough to be a lab. He don't have a tail. Just gorgeous animal, you know. And he's out there that day, and the wind was blowing. He got away from me, and I couldn't find him. I got on a big high hill out there, the highest thing out there, and I look out across this desert, and there's no light, yellow lab nowhere. And I panicked, and I started crying. I said, "God, please." I thought he'd had a heart attack, and I didn't want to leave him out there in that desert for the coyotes and stuff. And I said, "Please, help me find this stupid dog. Don't let me leave him out here in this desert." In less than 2 minutes, here come a guy riding a bicycle in the middle of the desert. I know God didn't have anything to do with it, but I thanked him anyway. So I start screaming and yelling. The guy looks at me and he goes, "What?" I said, "I don't want nothing." I said, "But I got a yellow lab out here somewhere in the desert, and I can't find him. Have you seen one?" He says, "No, but there's one in the parking lot sitting by a white truck that don't have a tail." I said, "Holy crap, that's him." So I go running back, and there he said, he's just sitting beside the truck waiting, you know. So I went and told Craig Clove what happened. I said, "Can you believe that?" I asked God to help me. And in no time, here come a guy riding a bicycle. And he goes, "Billy, it didn't happen like that." I said, "Craig, I ain't making up nothing. I ain't exaggerating nothing." I said, "You wasn't even there." He said, "Yeah, but you got the God thing mixed up." I said, "Oh, I do, do I?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Listen to me." He said, "No." I said, "All right, then what happened?" He said, "This is the real true story. This is what God was doing." He says, "Buddy is back at the truck going, 'Listen, God, I got this dumb redneck out in the desert. Will you please send him back to their truck?'" I said, "Well, maybe that's what it was. Maybe it was Buddy's God that got us back there." So anyway, I hope that you find some kind of a power here that I believe, that you've got to believe that works through good times and bad times. And let me tell you something. This is what an old man told me. There is a God, but he works through people, and he works through people like you. I always end my pitch the same way. This is what my father told me when I was really, really young. And he didn't tell the other boys. He just told me. I was my father's favorite. He liked Sam, but he loved the hunting fish for me because the rest of them didn't like to hunt and fish, and he did. And he told me about this story about a horse race in North Carolina. And every year they have this race. And whoever wins this race is the king for the year. And all the fathers, this is like 13 to 15 kids, they're all out into the winning circle except one father. There's one father back in the barn. And the guy looked at the man in the barn. He says, the man in the barn says, looked at the guy and says, "Why aren't you out in the winning circle with all the rest of the fathers?" And the father looked at the man in the barn. He says, "Listen, if my son wins this race, nah, he won't need me. But if he loses, I want to be here for him. And I am so glad that you were here for me when I got here. So if you're new here, come and join us. Get a sponsor. Put this process in your life and watch your family come stand in a winning circle." Thank you very, very much.
Hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.